You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Good morning, everybody. This is Joe Campanelli, and you're listening to In the Drink. This is the show that brings you all of the fascinating personalities from the beverage world, from winemakers to sommeliers. And today we have a wine distributor, a Bushwick native, a close personal friend, just a great guy all around, Mr. Ryan Looper here from T. Edward Wines. Ryan, welcome. It's good to have you.
Thanks a bunch, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
This is exciting for me because I think that the distributor, the wine distributor, or wine rep, as we call it in the industry, is such a vital part of the chain that brings wine from the producer to the importer, to the wine buyer, to the sommelier, to eventually the drinking public. But probably the link that I think gets the least amount of respect and is just as important as any other. It's something that I did for a while. I worked for a company called Vinifera Imports. I was just a little wet-nosed 22-year-old, and I knew nothing about wine or the world or anything at that time. And I found that I got a lot of, rightfully so, I got a lot of doors slammed in my face, but it gave me a new respect for the whole profession. So, Ryan, thanks so much for being here.
Man, it's awesome to be here. It's my, you know, I'm a Bushwickian, so I'm super psyched to be here and to talk about, I guess, what I do.
All right, so we work with T. Edward. We work with your company at all of our restaurants and are soon to open La Picho restaurant. Can you tell us a little bit about what guides the selections at T. Edward?
T. Edward is we'll be celebrating our 20th anniversary in 2014, so it's a company that's been around for a while. We are pretty relationship-driven, and it sounds a little trite, but it's absolutely not. We've met a lot of great growers and a lot of great people just from, hey, you should meet this guy. Hey, you should meet this guy. Hey, this woman's making incredible wine here. And that's really, I think, been the guiding force behind what we do. And it's good to work with people that you like. I think that's a lot of people kind of make this like a marketing game or something. It's really, for me, I enjoy every aspect of working with the people in the industry, both from the, you know, the winemakers, the growers, the, you know, even the suppliers at times. It's really, that's what I think attracts me to this business, along with the amount of challenge.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and that's how we started first working together. I have a friend who was buying wine at the Waverly Inn at the mm-hmm. time, Janine Lettieri. And she's like, you got to meet my friend Ryan. He's like, he's just the best. And he works for T. Edward. I'm like, wow, I really don't do a lot of business with them. And then, you know, as soon as we met you, and we did a lot more. So I do think that that's really important, that the relationships. But how do you do that? How do you work on building those relationships? I'm sure there are a lot of people who are trying to sell wine out there.
You know, that's a really good question. I wish there were a formula. I'd probably be sitting on an island somewhere. For me, it's a lot like any sort of dating or friendships. It just takes, some things are timing. It takes longer. It's sometimes to get solidarity about things. I think you have to really have a conversation. Sometimes people aren't ready to have a conversation. So I think there's a lot of give and take. I mean, for me, I tend to just try and listen more. I think that's the most important thing. I think we as a sales community, and we're all selling wine together, right? I sell to you, you sell to customers, and we all want to feel good about it. I think the most, one of the lost arts is listening. And I like to really get a feel. I ask you about wine all the time. I mean, I like to get a feel about what you're excited about, what you think is cool, what you've tasted that's good. Why do I think this wine is not so good? If you think it's good, you know, that's I think what makes this, it makes it really fun. I mean, that's the really cool part, is having a dialogue with people. And we do have so many smart people in this industry, and it's great. I feel very lucky to do what I do. I feel like blessed.
Yeah, and that word passion gets thrown around a lot, but you know, when you come and we taste wine, it's an exciting experience because you're so excited about it, and that genuine, you know, excitement and enjoyment, I think just carries through. And I think that's what makes a successful sommelier or someone who's selling wine on the floor as well, to have that true and genuine passion for what you're selling and for taking care of people. That, you know, that comes through and it gets the guests excited as well. So tell us a little bit about a typical day. What's your office day like? You don't have an office day.
Typical is, you know, I'm by nature, I like to have things pretty much, you know, I'm a former musician. I like to have things put together, and I'd love to be able to map things out. But the wonderful, wild world of the wine business doesn't really allow you to do that. So a typical day, you know, I'll be in the office for T. Edward has an office in Tribeca, and that really is a great thing. It allows me to pop in and out. I'll be in the office for a bit. I'll bounce out a bit. I'll be out all day with a winemaker. I'll be, you know, out meeting people. I'll go out and have lunch. You know, I wish there were a typical day sometimes, but you know, it keeps me on my toes. I'm constantly adjusting, and I think it's been good for me because I've learned to improvise quite a lot. Things happen quickly, mm-hmm. You know, it's a very fast moving, wine world in New York. So I like to be able to be nimble.
And then what are some of your favorite parts of the profession?
Discovery. Well, you know, one thing at T. Edward is we all travel a lot, and that's not normal. A lot of companies just don't do it. Just the you know, the head of the company will go out and go find wine. And we go out as groups, and we really, I've gotten to travel to Spain many times, which was life changing. I've gotten to travel to Italy many times. I've spent a lot of time in Piemonte. I've been to California a lot, and recently it's been very exciting. It's just that one, you know, travel is a huge thing. And seeing where this stuff comes from changes your world. You can read a book all day long, you know, you can memorize all the Premier Crus, but mm-hmm. You know, you go to Burgundy, you stand in Corton, and it's something. Right. And also going out to restaurants, you know, I love restaurants. I worked at Carmine's for years, the Leviathan in Times Square, which is sort of like it's like war every night there. You know, if you work there, you have this knowing glance when you see someone else who's worked there. But I always love the energy of the wine business, and it goes so close together with the restaurant business. So, you know, those two together, you know, I'm in restaurants every day. Every day.
You're in restaurants every day.
I love it. I love it.
And you know, and the travel, I think the travel is just such an important part of learning about wine education, and being able to convey what that wine it actually is, you know, because it doesn't just exist in the glass. What happened totally. In that vineyard, what the local culture is like, how they would treat the wine, I think really, really affects what that wine is supposed to be. And if you can understand that and portray that, then you're really painting a fuller picture of what that wine is.
Yeah, I mean, I always think about the Good Will Hunting, the movie, when Robin Williams is telling Matt Damon, you know, you crushed me, but I fell asleep very easily because I realized, you know, you don't know what it's like to, you know, smell what it's like in the Sistine Chapel, or you haven't seen what I've seen. You could quote me everything from books. You could memorize everything, but you haven't been there. And that's the thing for me is, like, I think in some ways people like to quote a lot of facts. They like to throw out a lot of things. They like to have all the things memorized, every Premier Cru, every this. But being there, the essence of it is I think monumental to understanding wine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me about tell us about some of the more challenging aspects of your job. What's a not great day like?
there are a lot of things that are tough. I mean, I think, like we were talking before, finding a good dialogue with somebody can take a lot of work. And if someone doesn't want to dialogue with you, it can be very frustrating. There's a lot of distributors and importers in New York, and probably more than there has ever been. I'm sure it's well over 250. I mean, it's everyone's out there. I remember 5 years ago, I was walking around, and you'd see a work with, you'd see a winemaker here or there. Now you see winemakers every single day in town trying to sell their wine, walking around with a sales rep. So, you know, I think that's challenging for me, is like to get people on the same page and either meeting up or just really just a dialogue. That can be very challenging. If you have stock issues, you know, where something goes out of stock that is a surprise, that can be tough. Delivery of wine can be tough sometimes. Yeah, I mean, there are so many things. What really keeps me up would be if I feel like I've either screwed it up or I'm not doing the best job I can. That would be the one thing that would really bother me. How do I shift that? You know, that would be the thing that I'd be focusing on.
All right. Well, it's good to hear that it's not all, you know, 3-hour lunches with winemakers and hanging out with the beverage director per se. And that.
Right. Yeah. That's, there are glamorous sides to it, but really I think if you get into it, it's, and people always are asking me, you know, how do I get into this? Or I'm about to start doing this. And really my only advice is to focus on integrity and honesty. There are so many different ways to sell wine or to present wine or to meet up with somebody, and you either vibe with them or you don't. But if you're honest and you have integrity, I think it all works out. And I think that's, in some cases, what's missing. But yeah, and that follows through for me with wine. I like honest wines. Mm-hmm. You know, people say natural, people say this, say that. I mean, I like honest wines.
So you're going to approach an account that you're really dying to get. Say it's a really fancy.
Let's bring out the secrets.
Four New York Times star, three Michelin star restaurant. Oof.
Okay. Yes, I've been in this situation.
And you really want, you know, you'd love to work with these guys. They have a great reputation. You haven't worked with them yet. I'm sure you get a sample budget, and it's like one wine that would be on their list would like take your whole budget. Like, how do you approach something like that?
Well, I will say that when I first started, I did things a lot differently. I was pretty green, naturally. I knew something about wine. I thought I knew something about wine, but I really didn't know that much. I realize now. I still don't know that much. I'm constantly learning. But I used to just like come with a book, and like I'd have a quick drink, and I'd try and catch the sommelier, and that could sometimes work. It all works if you have a good vibe with them. I wish there was some magic formula. You know, I heard Jan de More speaking on the radio or on a podcast, and he said, there's no real formula. And I completely agree. Sometimes you think you vibe with someone and it doesn't really happen. But like a 4-star restaurant, it's tough. My instinct now would tell me that I'd reach out to them. I'd let them know I'm coming in, even if they're ignoring all emails or whatever. And I'd go in and I'd probably just check it out. And I'd see what I like about it. And I'd try and catch some. I'd be very honest. I'd love to work with you, you know. Sit down with me for 5 minutes. And if it's worth it, we'll work together. Mm-hmm. And I think that works most of the time. If you're just really honest with somebody. There's a lot of nerves involved sometimes. Sometimes someone's, you know, had a bad experience or whatever. You know, some people they're approached by sales reps every day, 5 times a day. And so, you know, I like to do things a little differently.
Yeah, I was always surprised how we're in the hospitality industry, but how unhospitable a lot of buyers could be. So I always make it a point to answer all emails.
That's true. You are very good about that. I mean, I think in general, people could take a note from that, and that if you're getting 1,000 emails from distributors, there might be some other things going on that you need to address. I feel like the sales reps that run around that are really trying to do the right thing should be treated like your first customer, just like they treat you. I think it goes both ways. And, you know, I think it happens. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's such, like I said before, it's just such a valuable and important relationship in the industry. I mean, our most successful wine by the glass of Dell'Anima right now is your Il Colle Rosso di Montalcino. And, you know, if we didn't have a good relationship, I know that you'd sell that all around town, but you're sure. Putting a little bit aside for us so that we can make sure that we have stock. And that's important. That's a wine that our guests freaking love. They get excited about it. The staff is just super excited to sell it. And that's important. That comes from our relationship being strong.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
All right. One other thing that I wanted to ask you about before we go to break.
Sure.
So which wine buyers are you excited about, like about their programs, about what they're doing here in the
city? This is a loaded question.
Who do you hate also?
Oh, right. No, just right. Kidding. It could be a little dangerous to just say all, you know, my top customers. So I'll say some people that I really have a huge amount of respect for that I may or may not work with. I think Christopher Chestnut at Alta & Cata is a savant-like gentleman. I like him a lot. He's intense, and he's doing a program at Cata, which is new, that has things that you don't see for... Really, I mean, one of my big complaints across the city is wine's just way too expensive. Mm-hmm. We get obsessed with, as I think wine buyers on both sides, we get obsessed with margins and how do we make this. And there's no margin on a wine that doesn't sell. It just doesn't exist. So I like wine programs that give a lot of value, and Alta & Cata do that. I just had dinner at Dell'Anima. I drank some great wine for way under... Or you see it other places. You see, like, Talia will do her. I really enjoy when she'll compare pricing. But oftentimes, it's the same wines that she's talking about. This Cascina Francia is this here, and it's this here, or whatever. To me, you look at By the Glass programs, people will start to feel the value if you stop deciding that it's all about margin. Sometimes it's got to be about giving the people something.
Yeah.
And I think, in general... Also, wine lists are getting way too big. There are people putting out these wine lists that are just ginormous, 450 selections. For me, the ones that are really functioning, that I really love, are the ones that are a little smaller. I love Gramercy as a wine list. I think a lot of people love that wine list. There's a lot of value there. I think Union Square Hospitality Group in general, you can go to any of those restaurants and find a lot of value.
Yeah. I think Gramercy is the best wine program.
Yes.
Best all-around total beverage program in the city, in my opinion.
I like people who take chances, too. I mean, you have Blue Hill, Claire Blue Hill. She takes a lot of chances. She doesn't overcharge. I mean, you have people all over the city. There's so many good wine directors, but I think the issue comes where the owner is sitting down and saying, hey, what's the margin on this program? And you have to be able to say, I think back, I'm giving people such a huge value that we are rolling through so much wine that this is what we're about. If we're all about just dumbing it down to the lowest common denominator, I had this someone say to me, Bubba will never know. That was his concept. Bubba will never know that I bought this wine for $3 and I'm charging $12 a glass for it. And I think that's a bad concept. I think we should be doing...
I agree. We always say it in our group with all of our managers that the restaurant industry is just about building goodwill. You build goodwill with your suppliers, with your customers, with your employees. Keep building goodwill, and eventually good things are going to happen. All right, so we're gonna come back after a short break with some of Ryan Looper from T. Edwards' favorite wines and his underrated wines. Thanks a lot. You're listening to In the Drink.
Danger in the snow, danger in the...
welcome back. We're in the drink here. I'm Joe Campanelli, the beverage director of Del Anima Lartuzzi La Picho Restaurant and Anfora Wine Bar in downtown New York City. And I'm here with my good friend and native Bushwickian.
It's perfect.
Ryan Looper of T. Edward Wines. Now we're going to talk to Ryan a little bit about some of the wines that he thinks are very underrated, wines that he personally really loves and would like the rest of us to know a bit more about. Ryan, so what are some of those wines?
So I brought a couple things today. One thing that I think there's a lot of value, one area in France where you can buy a top producer for a fair price, is the Alsace. And Alsace gets very little love generally. I mean, I think there could be more on wine lists around the city for sure. There's Riesling has really caught on, I think, finally. It used to be like everyone would say Riesling's going to catch on every year, and it kind of wouldn't. It's like the Peacoat. The Peacoat's coming out by it. It would always be on sale at the end of the season. But Riesling's done really well. And so I think on top of that, you've got some great producers in the Alsace. It's varied terroir. It's historical. And really, we're running out of areas in France to find value. Even Beaujolais is escalating. So this is Dierler, really, really old school producer. They're biodynamic. This is Sylvaner, really old vines. I love the wine. I think it's incredible. You could buy that retail for $19.99.
That's fantastic.
That's insane,
right? That's insane. And I didn't wait till you finished telling about it to drink, because this is a producer that I know and flip and love. It's really, really good, and just killer values. And that's just such an interesting thought, that Alsace is such a classic wine region, place with a ton of just great names, top producers. And we're looking at a place where, it's kind of been overshadowed now by some of the other emerging regions, and you can find some really great value. This is insane. This is just, I have a ton of acidity.
It stays on the palate. You got length. It is so food friendly. Minerality for days. I mean, for me, you can find, and really, actually, there are so many good growers that people don't know in the Alsace. We're bringing in a guy, Pierre Frick, that a lot of people don't know about. Biodynamic since 1981, never chaptalized since 81. Does everything with crown cap. I mean, it is like super dope stuff. I mean, also some unsulfured things. I am very excited about the Alsace. And really, it's been the Modern has had a lot of Alsace. You have some little pockets. I think Madrigal has some at the Belud Sud restaurant. Mm-hmm. But it's underrepresented, and I think that's a shame. So
yeah,
that's my pitch on Alsace. Autumn of Alsace.
There's some good drinking happening over at the Modern.
For sure.
It's just an exciting list. You can find some really old Marcel Dyce on that list that is below the price of that wine that would be at a for the current release, which is super exciting. So Dierler, that's pretty spectacular. What else do you have there?
So obviously, there's a revolution in California happening. There's some people looking into making wines with a lot of balance. It's a different idea, I think. It's evolved. And there's a guy, Kevin Kelly. He makes some wines called a Salinia, is his label. He used to be the winemaker at Leoco.
And now it's John Raytech at Leoco.
Yes, it's Raytech.
John Raytech of Cerritas fame. That's pretty exciting. So this is the former winemaker from Leoco.
Yeah.
And
so
when I was in college, my visiting professor was Wynn Marsalis. And this guy was like super versed in classical music and an amazing genius with jazz, with improvisation. For me, that's very much what Kevin is like. He's a guy who lived and worked with Meyer Camuset. Lived at Christian Gouge, came back. You know, he's done a lot of different things. This is from a single vineyard in Chalk Hill. The fruits split between Kevin and Pax Mali at Windgap. And this whole cluster macerated Pinot Gris, like Ramato style, from that vineyard. It's pretty cool.
Wow. I mean, it looks like a rosé. Yeah. And I've never, you know, Pinot Gris is a pale kind of red grape. And I've had some other Skin Mastery and Pinot Gris, but nothing that's so dry. It's just like just tannic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super firm. But I love, you know, you've done a lot with these wines. I think when I went to Friuli, these wines really came alive for me. I started to understand them more. I got to go to Venice and have a wicked lunch, and I realized that macerated wines can be a bridge between, you know, whites and reds, and you can find a lot of different applications for them with seafood that I think is really cool. And this, you could have a lot larger food than that with this.
But yeah,
it's pretty fun.
You know, it reminds me a lot of Radicon's Pinot Gris. He's doing a Pinot Gris right now, 100%. Very similar color, also has a ton of structure. And yeah, that's what I like them for. I like them for those dishes that you're not sure if you want a white or a red, but they're protein heavy dishes. Maybe it's a game bird.
Totally.
Maybe it's even a pork dish that the set is really, you know, kind of in the middle. And I think that those skin macerated wines are just a really good bridge for that. That's really exciting stuff.
It's pretty sick wine. I'm very excited by what's happening. I went to West of West Fest and saw these Sonoma Coast growers, and I was just like blown away with how good these wines were. I think there's a lot of things happening in California that are going to make people very happy.
Yeah, so one of the things that I always like to do when we taste together is I don't want to know the price until I've decided.
Yeah.
You know, usually when you taste with a rep, they'll give you a sheet.
Do that, by the way.
Yes, Ryan does not do that.
There's a reason, because I don't like people. There are two things that I don't like people doing that are really pet peeves of mine. I don't like people picking up the bottle and looking at the alcohol before I pour the wine. I think that's uncool. I also don't like people to look at a wine and look at the price and make a decision before they've even given the 5 seconds that we're given normally. I think some of these wines, you know, you need to leave them in the glass for a bit. You can't just make a 2 second, oh, I don't like this. I think in general, that's why I was saying earlier, I mean, I don't like to bring out that much wine, bring out 3 or 4 wines tops, because I want to give people time. Put it in the glass, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I like to judge the wine based on what's in the glass and what the story is of the winemaker. And if I like what's in the glass and I like what the story is, then I'll come up with what I think that wine is worth. And if it's more than I think it's worth, then we'll buy it. And if it's less, then I will, as long as it, you know, fits on the list.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Something that's of great value is, I think, can be pretty obvious. Rioja, I'm a huge fan. I drink a lot of Rioja. I think it's in a very understood area. And in some ways now, I think it's gotten too understood, because now it's all about Gran Reserva, Reserva, Crianza, all this stuff, and old school producers. And what I think we're missing is the terroir of Rioja. There's a lot of variance. There's a cultural divide, Basque region, part of it's Basque, part of it's not. As you get up into the hills, the elevation change, soil change. Mm-hmm. And so here's Lindes de Remiuri, which is from Telmo Rodriguez. And this is really exciting, because this is, he's actually delineated the villages that this is from. And this is the future of Rioja for me, is delineating actually where it is from. This is from La Bastida and San Vicente. But part of my beef is, like, I love Lopez, right? Everybody loves Lopez. But if you ask most people where Tondoni is, they have no idea. And that's where I think we're missing a piece with Rioja. And what I like about this is, of course, he's doing all the right things in the vineyard. You know, he's I'm not going to say it's 200-year-old oak barrels, but I mean, you can taste it. It's obviously Rioja. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is really exciting about what he's doing. He's a revolutionary guy. To get them to put the villages on a label is a big deal.
So you think there's terroir that is associated with each specific village?
For sure. If there's an old school map of Rioja, mm-hmm. and you can see the soil, and it's very interesting, because the great soils, you know some great vineyards that are on those soils, and Remiuri is the highest elevation house. All their plots are the highest elevation in Rioja. I think there's a lot there. I think we get obsessed with Gran Reserva, and I can understand that. I was just telling you I've had some great Gran Reserva. I love it. But I think it should be site-specific, too. What do you think?
Yeah, that's right. During the break, Ryan and I were talking. It's like, man, that was such a good... That was such a good call, like calling out Christopher Chestnut about how great his lists are. And I've had multiple exciting drinking experiences, like just feeling like I'm robbing him. Like there's that's less than it cost you for that bottle. Totally. How is that possible? And he was saying that he's able to get some really great old Muga Gran Reserva on that list for a very reasonable price. But yeah, I think that understanding the terroir is something that's missing.
You'll see a lot more Rioja coming out in the coming years. You already see the big houses putting out these large Cune offers going back to way back in the day, but there'll be more.
I think of it kind of like where the Mosel is missing its opportunity. You have Dead the name on. Of just like of the ripeness level that's on the bottle, and that really doesn't tell you anything anymore. It really, really has, if it's a Cabernet or a Spätlese, I mean, everyone can pretty much get those ripeness levels in most years if you have a decent vineyard. And
nowadays, for sure.
Yeah, nowadays it didn't. So yeah, so understanding the terroir as opposed to the ripeness level or if it's Reserva or Gran Reserva is
it's the idea of élevage versus site. I'm more interested in the site-driven side of it, and I think that's where it's going to go. When you go to Rioja, I'm sure you've probably already been. You go and you stand in a couple different vineyards. You go to an old vine, pre-phylloxera vineyard in Torremontalvo, and then you go over to San Vicente by Remy Uri. There is a major difference. It's just like when you're in Burgundy and you walk 20 feet to the next vineyard. You go into Le Champagne or whatever. It's different. So it's cool.
Okay, since we're running low on time, and it's rare that I'll have a native Bushwickie in here. What's going on in the Bushwick wine scene right now? Are there some restaurants that have interesting wine programs? Where do you buy wine? Is there a local wine shop? Like what's going on here? Tell us about the landscape.
The Northeast Kingdom has really made some great changes. I just had a dinner there and they have some crazy values, great wine. She's not overcharging. Her name's Debbie. They really are doing a great job over there. They've done some revamp. I just had a great meal and a great time with wine there. As far as buying wine, it's tough. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. There's a shop over here. I haven't been in there enough to really make a judgment call, but, I think that's one thing we're missing. And I think as a wine scene, I think we're a little, we're on the young side. I think we're getting there. It's gonna move quickly. There are restaurants opening all over the place here. And I think it's going to really, the story is yet to be told about what happens with the wine in Bushwick. But I think there's a lot of opportunity. People are really open in this neighborhood. I love this neighborhood. It's been amazing to me. So it's still spicy, and that's great.
Yeah. Walking through the restaurant this morning, I saw a bottle of Palo Bay on the shelf here in Alberta, so it's nice to see.
Nice, yeah.
I don't think, 5 years ago, anyone would have thought that any Palo Bay was being served in Bushwick.
Yeah, I mean, Roberta's has some cool stuff on the list that's been there. The Cantina Giardino stuff is on there. They got some wacky stuff, and they got some straight-up stuff. It's cool. It's cool. It's in development.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Ryan Looper from T. Edward Wines. Look at the back of your bottle of wine if you see T. Edward. It's probably going to be pretty tasty. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Joe Campanelli for In the Drink.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.